Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Read with Michelle Martin.
It is one of the most anticipated books of the year. It's already secured a Netflix adaptation with Julia Roberts and Denzel Washington, part of the cast. In Leave the World Behind, a white middle-class family rents a beautiful Airbnb home in Long Island for a getaway. One night, the older black couple who owns the home, the couple say they're homeowners, arrive back at the house. They arrive in the midst of what they say has been a sudden blackout in New York, and we watch events unfold as the power is cut and the bars and the handphones and even the internet disappears. Thrilling, beautifully written. It's been described as a signature novel for a year that feels like an apocalypse could be around the corner. Leave the World Behind was published October 6th. It's been longlisted for the 2020 National Book Award for fiction. We are thrilled to welcome novelist Ruman Alam. Good morning, Ruman. Welcome to Singapore.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
So I've heard you say in an interview, you say authors use what books are about to look at other stuff. Talk to our listeners about what this book is about.
I think that the book, as you say, it is a book that is talking about the conditions of the contemporary moment, right, where we do feel like apocalypse looms around the corner, or that things are really, that reality has outpaced our imagination. But hopefully the book is looking at the smaller, more human stuff about what it is to be a parent, what it is to be a spouse, what it is to be a neighbor or another human to a stranger, how people will respond to moments of crisis. And there's no shortage of moments of crisis unfolding around us in the real world, of course.
Absolutely. So the book has been described as one that has the metabolism of the thriller genre, but it's so much more. This is your third book. How did you want to push yourself as a writer with this book in terms of the storytelling?
Well, the thriller is such a great genre because it manages to catch the reader's attention and hold them there. The author is kind of holding the reader in the palm of her hands, right? Mm-hmm. And many, many readers love that experience. They love sort of ceding control to an author, to an authorial voice. It's almost like being told a bedtime story by a parent, but it's one that you can't get out of, one that feels really gripping. I love that idea, and that is not necessarily always how literary fiction operates. Mm-hmm. Literary fiction can be a little more ruminative, a little more dreamy, a little more indulgent in the author's own flights of fancy. I wanted to try and accomplish both, to write a story that felt propulsive, that the reader was inside of and really wanted to understand, but that also had the depth, or you know, the polish to the language and the depth of thinking that we associate with literary fiction.
I'm curious if your work over at the magazines, you wrote for several magazines, has that shaped the way you approach writing at all as a novelist?
It probably has, because when I work as a book critic, which I do fairly often, I have the opportunity to look at the work of writers who are much better than me. I'm studying closely the work of Zadie Smith or Ben Lerner or, you know, Laurie Moore, and I'm getting to think about the people who have really defined how English language literature works. So I'm bound to learn a lesson, I think, and I'm bound to be able to apply that to my own work. And I do think it's also very useful for a novelist to learn what it is to meet deadlines, to finish your work. When you're a journalist, as you know, you go on the radio every morning, you have to do it. You can't be late. You can't come in late. So that particular responsibility to treating my work as just my labor, I think, is very useful for me.
You know, one of the fun things about listening into programs like this as readers, when we hear our favorite authors, we're always curious about your art, right? So is Leave the World Behind, the book that we read now, the same book you started writing, or did you make key pivots along the way?
Oh, that is a really interesting question. I mean, certainly I think you begin a book with a sense of a roadmap. You think you know where the journey is going to conclude. And I think that there's a bit of improvisation in play always. As you're writing into a fiction, as you're writing into a character, you begin to understand them almost as real people, which of course they aren't. It's still something that you've invented. But it takes on its own logic. And so the story may carry you into a direction that you didn't necessarily foresee. I do think, for the most part, this is the book I set out to write. But so much of what has changed is not the shape of the book itself, but the context into which I'm publishing it. The year, you know, the political the times are moving very quickly. And so the cultural context and the political context into which I'm publishing the book is quite different than the one in which I began writing the book.
Absolutely. I mean, so many readers have already said, you know, they think the novel is so prescient, given the very real sense of isolation so many of us are feeling this year.
Yeah.
And I've heard you say so beautifully that the present moment kind of literalizes the metaphor that is happening inside the book. I wonder if you can elaborate on this and why this sense of isolation was important to what you wanted to achieve.
Sure. In the story inside the book, a couple has gone on vacation. As you said, the homeowners have come. So that this couple and their children and these two homeowners, so there are six people gathered in the home, and they're kind of trapped there. And it has been the experience of so many people listening to this right now that for the last 6 months or so, we have all felt a little trapped in our homes. We've been trying to stay in service of the public health, right? And so trapped isn't really a fair word to use if you're fortunate enough to have a home and to, you know, be able to make a living from your home and all of that stuff. But it's inevitable that after a time, if you have children or, you know, you get tired of being in your place and with your family. And so that feeling of isolation, even if you're with other people, can grate on you. In the book, it's very scary. These six people are trapped together in a home. They don't really know what's happening in the outside world. This is an eerie resonance with the circumstances I just described, where we are all kind of staying at home and don't have full access to full information about what's happening out in the world. In many ways, because it's just unknown, and in some ways, because of political forces dictating what it is we are allowed to know. So I do think it's sort of an eerie resonance in the culture, but I think that that sense of isolation is in some ways fundamental to the human experience. We are all kind of alone, and we are all looking for communion and looking for community, and maybe that is ultimately what it is to be a human being.
I think I chewed my fingers down to the bone midway in this novel. What is key to setting up a novel this unsettling, Ruman?
I think it's the language. I think that I think from the very outset, the book has a sense of foreboding. The first 30 pages or so of the book are describing what is objectively a pretty lovely experience of a comfortable upper-middle-class family going out on holiday, a luxury holiday, no less. They're driving in their nice car. They're going to a beautiful part of New York State. They go to the grocery store, and they buy all kinds of delicious, indulgent groceries, as one does when you go on holiday and you splurge on the organic tomatoes or the beautiful nectarines at the farm stand. There's no reason that that should be scary, but I think the language suggests a sense of menace, or that there is something deeper happening in the story. And early in the book, there is a shift in the register of the book when this the couple who owns the home do arrive on the doorstep, and you understand that the book is going to be different. It's not going to be a story about vacation necessarily, but it will be a story about confrontation between these two different kinds of people. So, but I think that groundwork is laid in the language, and I'm delighted to hear that it made you chew your fingers, because that is exactly the intention. So I'm very pleased to hear that.
There is such a sense of mystery and a beauty to the way that unfolds, but there are also big themes of race and class and humanity and privilege. What about understanding or a lack of understanding of race do you hope to lead readers to?
Well, you know, it's so tricky because I don't get to dictate that, right? I had my 260 pages to make my case, and it's up to the reader to determine what she takes from that. I do think the book is asking whether the things that we use to understand our place in society, whether those are race or class or our relationship to our work, are those fundamentally useful as society shifts and changes or experiences an emergency? Will it be useful in a world racked with problems stemming from global climate change, for example? Will it be useful to be rich? We do know that in some ways, of course, global climate change affects the population inequitably, and that it is much more difficult for people who do not have money and resources and communities that are poorer. But fundamentally, will having a reserve of cash in your safe, in your country house, protect you? And I think that that is a chilling question to confront, because so much of how we think about ourselves is through the lens of our class or our race or our gender or our professional accomplishment.
So it's so interesting that, you know, I'm reading through this book and Denzel Washington is mentioned in the book and now he's going to star in it. What did you make of that?
Well, it is one of many unpredictable, sort of unbelievable turns of events in my experience with this book this year. I mean, it's absolutely thrilling. In the book, Denzel Washington is mentioned. He's deployed almost. Amanda, the white renter, says to George, the black homeowner, that he looks familiar early in the book. And then later on, in a moment of real tension, she kind of blurts out awkwardly, "Oh, I realize you look like Denzel Washington. That's who you remind me of." I think that readers understand that there's a particular weight to that, right? That she means to say something reassuring. She means to say, "I see you and I recognize you." But really what she ends up saying is something that's racialized and a little offensive, that she's contextualizing him, you know, by saying, "Oh, you remind me of this black Hollywood star."
And she realizes it as well, right?
And she realizes how strange it is for her to say something, how improper it is to vocalize that in that particular moment. I mean, Denzel Washington and Julie Roberts both are incredible performers. I am just absolutely, I still can't quite believe that they're going to have anything to do with this project. I'm absolutely thrilled. I cannot wait to see him inhabit this role, and I'm very curious to see how Sam Esmail, who is the writer and director, will handle this particular moment of almost self-awareness in which the actor will have to respond to an allegation that he resembles the real actor.
So interesting. So are you pretty much handing over the reins to the director? Will you have any input into what we eventually see on small screen?
I mean, what I've been saying is that this is a bit like asking me to, like, coach Serena Williams, right? Serena Williams doesn't need my pointers on how to play a tennis match, and Sam Esmail does not need my pointers on how to write a script. Sam's work, you know, Sam, he made a television show called Homecoming, which is just an absolutely extraordinary distillation of his particular sensibility. And in our early conversations about this work, I just felt so reassured about his generosity and his response to the material and his, and because all of these conversations happened before the book had been published, it was just tremendously reassuring for me to hear from another artist, one who I really admire, that he had seen something in the work. And so I very confidently place it in his hands.
So we're all looking forward to, you know, your career as a writer, your long career, hopefully. Are there key questions that you are interested in exploring across your work as a writer?
That is such a good question. And as you said before, with respect to the individual project, I think the individual project shifts as you're writing it. And hopefully the career shifts as you're engaged in it. I mean, one of the things that always appalls me, we're having an election season in this country, right? So one of the things that always appalls me in our conversation about politics is the notion that a politician in his 70s is meant to think the same thing he thought in his 30s or 40s. You should grow and you should expand and challenge yourself intellectually. I do think at the moment I'm very interested in these questions of the tension between the individual self and the rest of society. But I may be on to writing, you know, murder mysteries and cookbooks in 10 years. Who knows? Who knows?
Well, we look forward to it all. Thank you so much for joining us live here on Money FM. Ruman Alam is the novelist behind Leave the World Behind. Ruman, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate your time.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.